Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 666 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. Welcome to another Superman Sunday episode. Today, I'm going to be talking about Action Comics number 1006. It's from writer Brian Michael Bendis. We have art and the main cover by Ryan Sook. We have Brand Anderson handling the colors, Josh Reed doing the letters, and there's a variant cover by Francis Manapul. So much like a lot of the Action Comics, I think maybe every issue of Action Comics since Brian Michael Bendis took over, the splash page is a picture of someone's desk. This time it's Trish Q, the gossip columnist, or as she would like to have her title, the social reports or arts and style editor for the Daily Planet. So we see some pretty funny headlines on her computer here, different stories she's working on. Super Love Triangle, obviously being the most prominent one with Lois, Luthor, and Clark, or Lois, Luthor, and Superman, according to the pictures here. We've got Trunks Are Back with both Batman and Superman and the Guardian all having pictures there of being in trunks. Also, Martian Manhunter sex scandal, where we see the Martian Manhunter and his wife, his mate, like we saw in the recent first issue of Martian Manhunter, sort of getting down in the Martian way. I don't know that we really see too much other of consequence, or if any of this is really going to play into any sort of future stories coming down the pipe. There is a Cobra cult leader uses social media to spread message, which we'll see the Cobra cult show up in an upcoming issue of Action Comics. And there is one that also says Young Justice is back. And why is that the case? We do know that Young Justice has returned in a eponymous title from Brian Michael Bendis. There's also one, and this might be the one that's most interesting, Greg Rucka writing unauthorized Lois Lane book. Man, I would love to have a Greg Rucka Lois Lane title out on the stands, but I'm not necessarily holding my breath for that. So anyway, on the next page, we see that the Metropolis mayor is having a picture taken with a bunch of children dressed up in superhero costumes. He's not really happy about it. As he walks away, he tells his assistant, "I thought I told you no more kids." And his assistant says, "It's a children's charity event." To which the mayor starts to respond, "Kids carry diseases, actually." But we see Clark sneak up behind, saying, "Mayor Hopkins," kind of get a reaction to the report that you told the fire department to shut down the investigations of the number of building fires in the city. And the mayor is immediately surprised, and we know this stems from the mayor's conversation at the gala with Melody Moore, which she relayed to Superman. And now Superman in his Clark Kent persona is pursuing that lead. One of the other assistants is telling Clark that this is so inappropriate, and the female assistant saying, "You know how this works, Kent. You gotta call and make an appointment." And Clark saying, "Yeah, I have a couple of sources actually," And the mayor tries to sort of deflect, saying, "You know, what I said was once characters like Superman and Batman start sniffing around, that crime scenes get tainted." And Clark's not about to let it go, saying, how does that happen, Mr. Mayor?" And Mr. Mayor kind of ignores that second part of the question and says, "Well," the mayor says, "basically once that happens, he'd rather put the resources of the city into something valuable because he doesn't think that once the crime scene's tainted, anything can be recovered, and they're basically wasting resources." And then he tells Kent, "Why don't you do an article on that? Why is Superman always involving himself in things we don't need him for? We have a police department for that. We have a fire department for that. He needs to stick to the space monsters and the toy man. That's what we need Superman for. Let him do his job." And then he says, "Hey, how's that wife, Kent?" And Clark says, "Well, she's good, Mr. Mayor. I'm sure she sends her regards." And the mayor responds, and again, why is he such a jerk? He says, "What's that like, I wonder? Because I know where my wife is, Kent." And Clark ignores it, says, "You know, back to the question, it seems that damage to the city caused by a series of fires would warrant investigations for that." And as the mayor drives away, he says, "Okay, whatever. Good luck on the story. You should do an article on who leaks these leaks, though. How's that any way to run a city?" And meanwhile, Clark's thinking that he could hear the mayor's heart beating like a jackhammer all through that exchange. He was sweating profusely, and the mayor flatly denied it, and he's actually listening in to the mayor and his aide as the car pulls away. And the mayor's cussing up a storm, wondering who it was that talked to the press, and the assistant saying, well, Mr. Mayor, did you tell the fire department to stop investigating the fires? And the mayor's kind of wondering out loud, was it that fire chief Moore? Was it her that snitched? And the aide's like, wait, where did this happen? Said, in private. It was at the Diamond and Pearl Gala. And the mayor says, how was that private? And the mayor says, well, you know, we were off to one side. No one heard. And I can only imagine at this point that the aide is shaking her head, you know, wondering at the stupidity of this guy saying it. So it was in public. And oh, my God. You're saying nobody heard, but the Daily Planet just tapped on your window and told you that they heard it. And you're still going to look me in the eye and tell me that. And he's going on, you know, it had to be Moore, that new fire chief, the redheaded one, Moore, Melody Moore. And the assistant tells him, well, I'll be blunt, sir. You better tell those quote unquote friends of yours nothing better to happen to her. I mean it. The press is now watching. If something happens to her. So Clark then heads into an alley and changes into Superman and flies away. And there's not even any dialogue in this scene. So it's kind of interesting that this scene is even in here. And maybe it's in here because as Clark walks down the alley, he passes a boy in a Green Lantern shirt reading a Green Lantern comic. The boy looks up and sees Clark. You know, he already has his glasses off, but looks up and sees Clark. Clark holds his finger to his lips, obviously telling the boy quiet, and then changes into Superman and flies off. It's a small scene. I don't know necessarily why it's in here, like I said, because it takes up a whole page. There's no dialogue. But I'm not sure what the point of it is. What is Bendis saying here? Are we going to see this boy show back up? Is he going to be threatened because now he knows Clark Kent's secret identity? Again, this... You know, I hate to keep beating up on Bendis, but this kind of thing, like clearly Bendis thinks it's important enough to devote a whole page to it. And maybe he's trying to show that Superman has some kind of, I don't know, special relationship with kids, that he would let a kid on his secret and let him see him change and fly off and all the wonder in the kid's eyes. But I personally just don't see Superman doing this because he's inadvertently putting this kid in danger because the kid saw him change from Clark Kent to Superman. To me, that doesn't make any sense. I don't understand it. I don't think it's necessary. And again, I just don't think Superman would do it. It doesn't make any logical sense. All he's done is put this kid in danger because now this kid has seen his Clark Kent face and seen him turn into Superman. I mean, we've had other stories in the past, particularly movies, I think, where Lex Luthor has speculated, so what does Superman do when he's not being Superman? Does he even have a secret identity? Why would he want to walk around masquerading as human? That was Lex Luthor's postulation, right? So I don't know. Again, I don't know why this is here. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe some of you guys like that Bendis does this kind of thing. But not only do I don't get it, I think it's kind of antithetical to who Superman is. I just don't think he would casually change into Superman from Clark Kent in front of this kid and let this kid have the knowledge. And the only safeguard is putting his finger to his lips. And now this kid has this secret that could literally get him killed. Yeah, I'm not buying it. So meanwhile, back at the Daily Planet, Miss Good, Robinson Good, is working on a story. Perry shows up over her shoulder saying, tell me you have something good. Apparently, she's working on a story about the Red Cloud having taken out Superman. And Perry's like, is this true? And she's like, well, I'm not working on a novel. Yeah, it's true. There's witnesses. Head to head, she took him out. And we know as the reader that Robinson Good is the Red Cloud herself. So obviously Perry doesn't know that. Asks if there's a reason for the fight. And she says, you know, I'm working on the why. Do you have Superman on speed dial? Someone said something about a watch. And Perry's like, clean it up. It could be front page. She says, it is cleaned up. And Perry, as he walks away, says, that's not how you spell does. So as Perry walks away, we see Clark kind of glancing over his shoulder and looking over there like, what's going on? It seems like he's getting more and more suspicious of Miss Good. And one other thing I'll point out is the little text in the corner of this panel says the Daily Planet, circulation down 11%. So Bendis clearly pulling from real world headlines or real world news that print media is definitely suffering. So Jimmy says hi to Kent, wondering if he's heard anything about Argus. It's like, you asked me that the other day. No, nothing. But what have you heard about the Red Cloud? And Jimmy said, well, I heard that she's a she and she beat the hell out of Superman. And Clark, And how are you, Jimmy? What have you been doing? Jimmy starts to say, well, funny thing. And he's talking about having slept with Talia al Ghul and maybe it was a mistake. And meanwhile, Robinson Good has gotten up to leave. And we see Clark sort of following her with his eyes, using his X-ray vision to take a look at her, clearly suspicious, whether he suspects her as Red Cloud, whether he suspects her involvement, whether it's something else entirely. But he does watch her get on the elevator. And as Jimmy's continuing to confide in Clark, Clark's not even paying any attention and says, actually, Jimmy, can I get you to hold that thought? And walks away. Jimmy sort of tosses his notes up in the air like, what am I even doing? Why are you even wasting my time? So we see that Superman continues to use his X-ray vision, or Clark rather, to follow Miss Good out of the building. So meanwhile, at a downtown fire station, we see that Melody Moore is about to leave. She's about to unlock her bicycle, and she seems to sense that someone's around. She's sort of looking over each shoulder, doesn't see anyone, and tells herself, man, you need some sleep, sister, like getting paranoid. But actually, she's not. And we see the Red Cloud show up saying, no, you were right to feel something bad was about to happen. People can feel it. You'd be surprised how many times I've seen someone really feel it before they see me. It's fascinating. And she immediately attacks Melody Moore, using her gaseous form to get inside Melody's lungs. And we see Melody's eyes start to roll back in her head. We see blood vessels in her eyes start to break, which is indicative of somebody who is being suffocated or drowning. And then all of a sudden, there's a big whoosh, and Red Cloud is literally blown away. Melody Moore drops to the ground. Superman has appeared, and he gives another big blast of his super breath to kind of blow the Red Cloud away. And Melody Moore is kind of peeking over his shoulder at Red Cloud as Superman says, I don't think I've given you fair warning, Miss Cloud, so consider this it. Stop. The Red Cloud's not impressed, saying, big talk, alien. We both know what happened last time we tussled. And Superman proceeds to sort of blow her around, keep her away from himself while she's trying to make him taste her poison. And she tells him, things are going to change around here. And again, she tries to get close to Superman. He blows her away again. And she says, huh, standoff. You're not infallible. And Superman pauses for a moment to say, you need to take a step back and think about the path you're on. This is Metropolis. A lot of people have stood where you are right now. And before he can say anything else, she attacks again, interrupting him, saying, how about you die, alien? And again, Superman is able to repel her with his breath. And as she starts to kind of reconsolidate her gaseous form, Melody Moore saying, can't you blow her into space or something? And Superman says, no. Well, I could, but... And Melody Moore's like, hey, go ahead. You know, she just tried to kill me. And Superman, ever the Boy Scout, ever, you know, trying to do the right thing, says, you know, we need to teach her by being a better example. Teach her to do better by doing better. And I love Melody Moore's reaction. She's all, oh, bleep that. And then actually apologizes to Superman. And Red Cloud seems to be holding her distance at that time. And Superman tries to appeal to her better nature again, saying, you know, you have this great gift, and obviously you're stuck in the middle of something. And if you need help, I'll help you. And he reaches out his hand. Says, you can start repaying your debt to society by helping me shut down whatever all this is. And what I was going to say before when he interrupted me is there have been a great many people who have stood where you're standing exactly right now. And they made the same mistake of assuming my empathy was weakness. And so I love that. Like, she's like, I fought you to a standoff. You know, we're at a stalemate. I'm your equal. And Superman is saying, no, this is Metropolis. This is my city. And I'm going to try to do the right thing. And I'm not going to push you too hard until you force me to, because I care. It's not that I'm weak. It's that I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt. So what he does finally also remind Red Cloud of is, most importantly, don't forget there are people behind me, all kinds of other characters behind me, all kinds of other heroes behind me who do not have my patience. So he reaches out a hand again saying, you can turn this around. I know you can. And Red Cloud's response to that is to dissipate and disappear. So Superman then turns to Melody Moore, asking her if she's okay. She's like, no, I'm not okay. I'm really freaked out. And Superman says, yeah, she tried to choke me too. I didn't appreciate that. And Moore says, but I don't mean to be critical, but you let her get away? And he says, I didn't let her. She's a murderer. And Melody's like, sorry, I wasn't trying to blame you. And Superman says, look, I took the liberty of checking you out with my X-ray vision. You seem okay, but I think you should still get to the hospital immediately just to get checked out. So Melody thanks him and then says, you know, I really thought I was dead. And Superman says, yeah, that's not the best feeling. And he gives her a hug. So now the scene shifts to a bar. We see Robinson Good and Mr. Strong there conversing. And Good's basically saying, did you hear that I fought Superman twice and I didn't lose? And he's like, well, yeah, but did you win? He's like, I didn't lose. So Strong's like, well, you know, that is something. It's like walking away from a shark attack, but that is why you hired me. And Robinson says, yeah. And, you know, with respect, I think things have changed now based on what I've kind of proven to you so far. So I think it's time that I talk to her directly. And Strong's response is, yeah, she knew you were going to say that. She's actually here. She's waiting for you. And so Good heads into a back room, meeting with a shadowy figure saying, it's very nice to meet you. I'm a big fan, and not just because you pay me. And the figure says, yeah, I know that. And Good says, well, did you know that I could stand up to him? And then we see the figure revealed saying, yes, but I cheated a little. I have experts. I have scientists that are constantly working on power set algorithms, and they keep an eye on these things, and they're always looking for new people to hire or recruit or headhunt. And you're right. What happened today, it does change things. And we see that this woman, this African-American woman, is holding some kind of a tablet device on which it says, my name is Leon. Add that to the list of things we never say. So they sit down at a table. There's a pizza between them. And Leon says, it's very nice to meet you face to face, Robinson. What I love about you beyond the obvious, obviously her powers as Red Cloud, is you seem to inherently understand and respect the philosophy behind the organization. Even people who work for me after a while, they get, it's like they forget the most important thing. And it seems like these two are very simpatico. They're very in line with their thinking. And they go on to say, yeah, people get greedy, they get arrogant, they get lazy. And that's what inspired Leon to install Robinson Good or Red Hood beforehand. And she goes on to say that the Boy Scout came here and changed the rules, and he didn't ask anyone's permission. Herself, she was born in a basement tenement in Suicide Slum, and she's built herself into something. And this blue bastard, as she calls him, he comes in to her system and throws everything in disarray. And they're never going to be able to kill him. They know they're never going to be able to beat him. But so far, they've been able to run the city without him even knowing they're there, and they've done that for years. And with everything that's happened recently, they've kind of lost sight of that, and they want to get back to that simple corporate philosophy of running the city underneath Superman's nose without him even knowing it. And so Robinson says, yeah, you know, I have an idea in that regard. It's a back-to-basics approach, and it sends a message without making the same mistake so many others have. And Leon says, oh, give me the details. I love a new plan. And it's good timing, too, because while you were busy doing your thing, I bought the Daily Planet. That cannot be good. And Robinson's surprised by that as well. She says, oh. Said, yeah, it should make things more interesting. And Robin says, yeah, for sure. Can I have Lois Lane's office? And Leon says, ah, sure. And we pan back to see an ancient car, an old car, a classic car, a car that we saw on the cover of Action Comics number 1, sitting in this room that these two women are sitting in conversing. So why is that there? How does this organization tie in with Superman first appearing and in the 30s? Like, what is going on? Because the new Superman with the new timeline shouldn't have shown up until much later. So why is this car, the same car, very much appears to be the same car we saw on the cover of Action Comics number 1. Why is it here? What does it have to do? What's the tie-in? So not sure, but clearly Bendis is moving pieces around on the board to sort of make sure that Superman is going to be challenged on every level, both as Clark Kent, both as Superman with the Red Hood sort of being his physical match. It does seem very much like a stalemate. And I love the edge that Bendis gave Superman in this issue as well, saying, this is Metropolis. So it's my city. It's under my protection. Don't forget that. And also, don't mistake my empathy for weakness. I love that aspect of it as well. What I don't love, and I've talked about it before, is we've seen this. This is Court of Owls. This secret organization operating for years and years and years in a city under the nose of an iconic hero. Yeah, been there, done that. It's not that interesting. It wasn't that interesting when Snyder did it for the Court of Owls. Although, to me, the best thing that came out of the whole Court of Owls storyline was the concept of the Talons. And that can be used in the future as something interesting. And the Court of Owls has become a faction within Gotham City that, now that Batman's fully aware of them, I can buy that much more than him not knowing about them for years and years and years. And now that they are a known quantity, they do sort of rear their heads from time to time, much like a Black Mask organization or a Ventriloquist organization or a Cobra or whatever other sort of criminal enterprise is the flavor of the month, so to speak. So I do like that aspect. It's another faction to cause problems for Batman. But the whole operating in secret underneath the noses of these heroes, yeah, it's not interesting. It's not very realistic if they have the powers that they have. And especially when you consider the skills, like forget about the physical superpowers of Superman, but you start talking about the investigative aspects of Clark Kent as a reporter and Lois Lane as a reporter, and you're telling me they never have caught wind of these guys? Yeah, I'm not buying it. I understand that's how Bendis wants it to be, revisionist history, but to me, yeah, it doesn't really make sense. Can't think about it too much, otherwise it sort of falls apart. So, and again, there are so many characters that are in the Superman mythos and in the Superman legacy and history of the character. Why Bendis has to go back to his crime noir roots and create these new characters of Robinson Good and Leone and Mr. Strong. I mean, it's fine to create new characters, but I just don't think it's necessary. I think he could have found characters to use. And even the Red Cloud herself, like her power sets or whatever, it's not particularly interesting. Oh, Superman can't hurt her because she's goes to gaseous. You know, she's a gaseous being. It seems like a cheap parlor trick in a way. So, unlike the Superman title, which, despite some of the things that have been happening over there, the story overall has been pretty consistent, and it's kind of on an upward trajectory. The Action Comic story has been very uneven for me. One issue will be good, next issue will be okay, next issue will be terrible. Very uneven. I just don't like what Bendis is doing here, and part of me doesn't understand what he's trying to do here. I talked about the page where Superman changes in front of the kid. What's that about? Again, I feel like it's two steps forward, one step back for Bendis. Like, you do know who Superman is, right? because it seems like fundamentally there's aspects of the character that you're just not understanding, or there's aspects of the character you're just trying to change because it doesn't fit the story that you want to tell. And that's fine. That's your prerogative, and that's DC Editorial's prerogative if they want to allow you to make those changes. But just like the Man of Steel movie, it's, to me, it does not feel like authentic Superman. It doesn't feel like the Superman that I know, that I've been reading stories about my whole life. So I keep thinking once in a while we have a great issue of Action Comics and I'll think, oh, okay, now he's kind of course corrected and we're on the right path and things should start falling into place. He just kind of had to move some things around, and maybe it's just my own personal opinion that it didn't seem to work, but now he's on the right path. Now he's heading in the right direction. And then we'll get an issue like this where it's, like, I don't know what to think. This issue is average at best, or things about it I liked, things about it I didn't like. And if you add it all up, it ends up as sort of a neutral issue, right? It wasn't terrible. It wasn't great. The things that I didn't like were balanced out by things that were done really well. And so that's cool. But ultimately, it's not, it doesn't stand out as special, right? It's not like, oh, that's a great issue. You've got to run out and read it. Same with the little kid. The fact that we have this organization operating under Superman's nose were things I didn't like. Superman's conversation with Red Hood, the whole, I'm the protector of Metropolis, don't mistake my empathy for weakness. His interactions with Melody Moore, his suspicions on Melody Moore, and the scenes where he's using his X-ray vision to examine her, that stuff's all great. So there's potential there. There's potential there. But the aspects of the story that fundamentally, for me, change who Superman is, I cannot reconcile those with the things that Bendis is doing well. It's too much of a disconnect. So hoping for better next issue. Hoping for some Lois. Hoping for some Clark. Hoping to see that relationship. What's the new status quo? I'm not real happy about Bendis basically creating an open marriage for these characters. Don't like that at all. It's not working for me. Can we get back to a little more classic feel, a little more of the Superman that we know and that we love to read about, as opposed to changing too many things too much? Like, I can't think that historically, looking back on, if it doesn't change, if it stays like this, this wildly inconsistent feel of the book, I can't imagine looking back on anybody looking back on this era of Superman and thinking, yeah, that's a great example of the character. I just don't see it. Man of Steel series, maybe, because it is much more superheroic. The Superman title, Bendis's Superman title itself, maybe. But this action story, no, not at all. It's wildly inconsistent at this point, and Bendis really needs to clean it up, in my opinion. So the art by Ryan Sook is great, but that's not a big surprise because Ryan Sook is a incredible artist. Especially love the kind of square-jawed look that he gives Superman. And the color palette by Brad Anderson is sufficiently muted that would make it suitable for a crime noir book. But again, and maybe that's why it feels so uneven to me, because it seems at times that Bendis is leaning into the superheroic aspects of Superman, and that works. But then you get an issue like this where it's much more crime noir in feel, and Superman is not a crime noir character. Maybe if you were telling stories of him back in the 1930s, that might work. But nowadays, I just don't think it does. So maybe that's where the consistency, or inconsistency rather, comes in. But I will say that the color work, the artwork is done exceptionally well. And it's the highlight of this issue for me. So all in all, didn't particularly enjoy this issue, didn't hate it. It wasn't as good as last issue. And I guess we'll wait and see what Action Comics 1007 brings to the table. So, I mean, 7 issues in now, I feel like we should be a little further along. But again, with Bendis bouncing around with all these different ideas and this inconsistency of story and tone and feel, I think it's hindering him in a way. So, yeah, waiting for him to hit his stride. I believe in him. Bendis is a super talented writer and has written a lot of things that I really like. And he's gotten better over the years. So not sure why he seems to be having a struggle here on Action Comics. So I want to thank everybody for joining. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platforms you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all your favorite podcast applications, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.